Eddie, the Junior Year. Chapter 6. The Big Spring Season, Part 3. Toward the end of the semester, Mr. Fraser has some good news for the team, so he has the team assemble in the auxiliary gym before they go out to the track and practice. The invitations have been distributed for the Spring State Invitational Meet, and Mr. Fraser plans to make the announcement. But everyone already knows what this meeting is about, and looking forward to hearing the news. Mr. Fraser will also have a few other announcements to make regarding next year's season. Mr. Fraser and Barbara walk into the gym together. Barbara has a seat with Kathy and Paula, while Mr. Fraser looks over a few papers. The team is already assembled on the bleachers. After a minute, Mr. Fraser opens by telling the team, "This has been the best and most talented team I have seen since I've been coaching. Every one of you is to be congratulated for your fine performance this year. Before I make an announcement, Barbara will give you some information that I want you to listen to carefully. What she is going to tell you will make a big difference next year." Barbara walks up and, with her British accent much more noticeable today, tells the team, "This year, this team has the potential to be the most decorated track team in the history of this state. Next year, in order to be equally as successful, we all need to do something between the end of this track season and next winter. Some of you already do this, but, for the rest of you, what I am going to tell you will make or break the team next year." The team is wondering what magical advice Barbara is going to offer. Barbara begins with her advice, telling the team, "This summer, if you want to excel next year, you are going to have to run, work out, swim, and do anything else you can to maintain and improve your physical fitness. You can be sure that the other local teams will be doing the same." "How do I know this?" "Some of the local high schools approach the university, looking for advice on improving their team's performance. Many of the other schools will be hiring interns, like me, next year. By the way, all of you are responsible for them seeking this advice by not losing a single meet in the last 3 years, and shutting out 3 opponents this year." The team claps and cheers. The team was not even remotely aware of the impact they have made in the area. Such dominance, however, will apparently be met with drastic changes by the other regional teams. Barbara then gives the floor back to Mr. Fraser. Mr. Fraser tells the team, "Next year is not going to be as easy. Mr. Ruff and Mr. Parker might just start their own Amazon exploration. I'm going to go to Paradise Island and Africa again this summer. If anyone wants to come and help me find new talent, let me know." The team laughs, and the Amazon cheer begins. Mr. Fraser knows he has the best team around, and the team clearly knows that Mr. Fraser is the best coach around. After a moment, Mr. Fraser tells the team, "Okay, it's time to get down to business. First, some good news. There is a guy in middle school who can run a 100-yard dash in 10.3 seconds. Another guy can run the 440 in 56 seconds, and there is a 5-minute miler coming up next year. Eddie whispers to Mark, "The guy who runs the 10.3 is my brother." Mark replies, "That's not bad, 10.3 seconds. I wonder who the other guys are." Eddie whispers to Mark, "Mr. Fraser just announced what's coming up next year from middle school. That's probably how Mahoney found out about us a few years ago." Mark whispers back, "I think you're right about that." And that is exactly how Mahoney found out about Eddie and Mark. When Eddie and Mark were finishing up middle school, at the end of the track season, Mr. Fraser announced to the high school track team, "Here's some interesting and good news. There are 2 guys in middle school who run the 100-yard dash in 10.1 seconds. Their 4x440 relay team is faster than ours. Every single one of the runners on that relay team can run a 55 or 56 second quarter mile. And they are in middle school. And their miler is faster than anyone on our team. Matt Wood, listen up. You might have some competition in the shot put next year. I could not believe what I was seeing. After hearing Mr. Fraser's announcement, Mahoney worried about Eddie and Mark all summer long before his senior year. Instead of worrying, Mahoney should have been training. As Eddie and Mark are whispering to each other, Mr. Fraser announces, 12 of you are going to state this year in 10 events. This beats last year. Are you ready to hear who is going? Eddie and Mark now pay attention. The team cheers, and then Mr. Fraser announces, in the 100-yard dash, we have Eddie and Kathy. In the 220-yard dash, we have Mark and Paula. In the 440-yard dash, Braden will be kicking ass. The team laughs at Mr. Fraser's commentary. Looking at his clipboard, Mr. Fraser continues, this is a big surprise to me. In the 880-yard run, we have Johnson, Mitchell, and Akinmola all going. In the mile, we have Mitchell and Akinmola both going. Now, for the relays. In the 4x440 relay, Eddie, Mark, Kathy, and Paula will be running in their last season together. In the mile medley relay, it will be Johnson, Braden, Akinmola, and Mitchell. Also new to this year is the 4x220 relay team, which is Johnson, Erica, Hoffer, and Elliot. And in the field events, Bobby B will be throwing the shot put, and Eddie will be throwing the discus. Hearing the news, the entire team cheers. Mr. Fraser continues, every one of you that I have mentioned has the potential to walk away with a gold medal in your event. And, as Barbara hinted to earlier, next year is going to be more difficult. So, when we get out to the track today, remember this. All of you are not only training for the remainder of this season, but for next year's season too. Mr. Fraser dismisses the team, and everyone heads out to the track. Kathy, Paula, and Barbara all walk out to the track together. On the way, Kathy asks Barbara, when did you hear about the other schools wanting interns too? Barbara replies, this week. You guys are the first to know. I'm sure your dad will have more details than I do. Kathy replies, he's mostly involved in his research. He actually just runs the state meets for fun. Paula mentions, it sounds like we're going to have to work harder next year. Kathy tells Paula, we won't be here next year. We'll be at the university. Paula, totally forgetting she is graduating this year, replies, okay, I don't want to hear it. That's about the dumbest thing I've said all year. Paula looks at Kathy and says, don't even say it. Kathy smiles and asks, say what? Paula replies, you were going to say no, it's not, and then I was going to chase you. Kathy and Paula decide to save their energy for practice today. Kathy and Paula get to the track, ready to run today's drill. Since the next meet is a few days away, Mr. Fraser will be running his favorite drill for the sprinters and distance group. The drill, which is a variation of fartlek training, developed in Sweden, is not anyone's favorite drill. During this drill, the distance runners will be running on the outside of the track for about an hour. After every mile, they will drop to the inside of the track and run 440 yards as fast as they can as if it were the final lap of the race. They will then drop to the outside of the track and run another mile. Any distance race that is more than 440 yards is nothing more than a 440-yard dash with a prolonged warm-up before the final sprint. After 15 minutes, they will get a 5-minute rehydration break. When the runners are fatigued, the distances are changed to a half mile of distance running coupled with a 220-yard sprint. This drill will get the distance runners accustomed to what they are to expect in competition. The sprinters will be sprinting on the inside of the track for one lap, or 440 yards, then drop to the outside, taking a recovery lap with the distance group. After the recovery lap, they will sprint for another 440 yards. Once they cannot sprint for 440 yards effectively, the sprinting distance is dropped to 220 yards with a 440-yard recovery lap. The sprinting distance will be then dropped to 110 yards once the sprinters have difficulty with sprinting 220 yards. And, like the distance runners, they will get a 5-minute break after 15 minutes. This is a difficult workout for everyone. Since the workout is not only aerobic, but also highly anaerobic, Mr. Fraser will give the team tomorrow off to fully recover. During the workout, Mr. Fraser and Barbara notice someone sitting on the bleachers with a notebook appearing to be doing homework. Mr. Fraser asks Wendy if she recognizes the guy. Wendy tells him that she has never seen the person before. Mr. Fraser is, for some reason, disturbed by the person on the bleachers. During the team's 5-minute rehydration break, Mr. Fraser and Barbara walk over to investigate. They walk up to the bleachers, discovering the guy is too old to be a high school student, and is perhaps a college student. Mr. Fraser asks the guy, "May I ask why you are watching my practice session?" Surprisingly, the guy responds, "Sure. I'm documenting this team's workouts. This track team wins all the time, and I'm finding out how." Mr. Fraser bluntly replies, "No, you're not. Get out of here." The guy replies, "But it's part of my assignment." Mr. Fraser replies, asking, "What assignment?" The guy becomes increasingly nervous. Barbara mentions, "Wait a second. I know you. You ran for Centerville a few years ago." Barbara worked for Mr. Fraser as a team assistant for 3 years and recognized the guy as one of their better distance guys from years ago, but she cannot remember his name. Mr. Fraser asks to see the guy's notes. The guy refuses to show Mr. Fraser the notebook, telling him, "I don't have to do that." Mr. Fraser, who is now ticked off, asks the guy, "Where do you go to school?" The guy is reluctant to answer, but Barbara points out to Mr. Fraser the cover of his notebook. The cover has the name of the college he attends proudly embossed on the front. Fortunately, it is not the state university that Barbara attends. Mr. Fraser, in a demanding tone, asks, "I suggest you start explaining." The guy replies, "I think I'd just rather leave." Mr. Fraser tells him, "Good. And if I ever see you here again," pointing to the athletes now running around the track, "these guys will give you a workout you'll never forget. And no one will have seen a thing." The guy promptly leaves, walking away knowing that he has been busted. Mr. Fraser tells Barbara, "It started. They are sending their spies here to study our workouts and find out how we win." Barbara tells Mr. Fraser, "I'm almost positive that guy ran for Centerville back when they were good." Mr. Fraser replies, "I'm sure he did, because he didn't deny it. After you mentioned that, he suddenly became silent and uncooperative. That's a dead giveaway." Barbara mentions, "I don't think we'll be seeing him again anytime soon." Mr. Fraser mentions, "We'll watch out for him at the meets." Barbara asks, "Do you still have our notes from way back then?" Mr. Fraser replies, "They are still in the filing cabinet." Barbara suggests, "Let's take a look when we get back. Maybe I'll recognize his name." After the grueling workout, the team heads to the locker room. On the way, Kathy mentions to Paula, "Aren't you glad you didn't start chasing me?" Paula replies, "Yeah, I'd say. That was some workout." Eddie comments, "That drill is pretty much a game of kill the man with the ball without a ball." Mark mentions, "Yeah. Maybe we should suggest another game of kill the man with the ball." Eddie suggests, "Hey, we can just bring the ball to the drill and play along the track." Mark replies, "That would almost be called football." While the team is getting showered and dressed, Mr. Fraser and Barbara go into the physical education office. They search through the filing cabinet for the notes from years ago. They both really want to know who that guy on the bleachers was. Barbara finds the file with notes from the time when she was a freshman. They look through the file, finding the name of a Centerville miler who was a junior at that time. Barbara mentions to Mr. Fraser, this might be the guy, Brad Evans. They find the files from the time when Barbara was a sophomore, and find the guy, who was then a senior, was in fact, a reasonably good distance man. Mr. Fraser mentions, yeah, there he is again. His times have definitely improved from the prior year. I remember that. Back then, we had no one who could beat him. Looking over the notes, Barbara mentions, that's definitely the guy. That would make him a junior in college right now. Barbara tells Mr. Fraser, well, I guess that's the best compliment we can receive from a competitor. Now, Mr. Fraser has another problem to contend with, but it is not a big problem. It is not what is done during practice that makes the team strong. It is what Barbara mentioned to the team before practice that makes or breaks the team. The workouts that are done during the off-season are what makes the biggest difference of all. Unless Centerville's newly hired spy intern, Brad Evans, follows Eddie, Mark, and the rest of the team around all summer, he will not have discovered any valuable information. A notebook with notes that read, they run around the track for an hour, is hardly of any value. Sitting on the bleachers, it would be hard to discover with certainty what is actually going on during the drill. But the fact that Mr. Fraser threw him out suggests that there is some secret workout going on. That will certainly spur some future interest. Later in the week, Paula stops by Angelo's service station to see if he has found anything yet. Paula walks in and asks Angelo, hey, do you remember me? Angelo replies, yeah. You're the girl who wants a CJ. Paula replies, yeah, that would be me. Angelo asks, did you find anything yet? Paula replies, no. Not yet. And I'm running out of time. Angelo tells Paula, I might have some good news for you soon. Paula asks, really? What kind of good news? Angelo tells Paula, Vinny tells me there's going to be a CJ coming into his shop in a week or so. I'm not sure exactly what happened to it, but the guy doesn't want it back. I hear that it still runs good. If I were you, I'd check back with me next week. This could be a good deal. With the possibility of good news on the horizon, Paula is a little more excited, but still kind of stressed. Angelo, seeing that Paula is stressed, tells her not to worry so much. Paula thanks Angelo again, and tells him she'll be back in a week. The team practices almost daily. With the state invitational meet, graduation, and the summer right around the corner, everyone's schedule is loaded down to the max. Mr. Fraser is very excited about this year's state invitational meet. Barbara has caught the Centerville spy, Brad Evans, spying on the team once again. She noticed him when she drove up before practice one day. This time, he was sitting in his parked car with a pair of binoculars, hoping to see something. Finding this out, Mr. Fraser decided to forego the usual practice session and have the team play a game of kill the man with the ball. Barbara told Mr. Fraser that documenting that the team plays kill the man with the ball during practice will really look good in Evans' notes. Eddie's MGB is also coming along well. He expects to be able to drive it this summer. The engine, which was completely rebuilt, runs well. The suspension has been reworked, and an anti-sway bar has been added. Eddie also added anti-tramp bars to stabilize the rear leaf springs during hard acceleration. The battery has been moved to the trunk, and the battery box behind the seats is now a hidden storage area. While there is not much left to do, Eddie's problem is finding the time to do it. Chuck's attorney has filed a guilty plea, and Chuck has agreed to do 624 hours of community service for snapping Erica's bra and giving her a wedgie. Chuck's mother asked the judge how he came up with 624 hours. The judge explained to Chuck's mother that 624 hours is 8 hours on Saturday and 4 hours on Sunday for the next year. The judge further explains that, with Chuck's record, He is doing Chucky a favor by keeping him off the streets and preventing him from getting in more trouble. Chucky had the nerve to ask the judge why nothing happened to Erica for beating him up. The judge explained that he is very lucky that Erica beat him up, and the ass kicking he received by Erica was nothing compared to what would happen to him should he go to jail. Mr. Crumb finally got his cast off and limps around the school just like Jimmy O'Brien. Now that he is mobile again, he is acting like his usual crabby self. He often resurrects the issue about being hit by the discus, but everyone on the track team seems to have amnesia regarding the issue. No one can remember who threw the discus that Mr. Crumb's leg intercepted on the field. Although Mr. Crumb is doing everything he can to find out who threw the discus, even if he did find out, nothing can be done about it anyway. Accidents happen, and the accident with the discus was his own fault. On the Saturday of the state invitational meet, the team meets at the school early in the morning, dresses, and gets on the bus. This year, there is also a spectator bus to bring the students who are coming to watch. The Amazon banner from last year has made its way onto the bus and will remind the competition who's boss. The team is ready to leave, and since the spectator bus is full, the overflow fills the team's bus. The bus drivers have to leave a few people behind, but one of them tells the students that he will be back for a second run. On the way, Eddie and Kathy watch the scenery go by. They have ridden these roads dozens of times on their bicycles. Next year, Kathy will take these same roads to college. When the bus arrives at the state university, the team unloads the equipment with the help of the spectators. The boxes of towels, Gatorade, chests of ice, cases of water, a long extension cord, and the large electric fan are all carried to the team's bench. A few of the students head up to the stands to hang the Amazon banner. Since they got there early, the fans get the choice seats in the bleachers. For the next half hour, the stands fill with spectators, and the teams arrive one by one. Barbara decides to take a walk by the Centerville bench to see if she can spot Brad Evans. At the Centerville bench is their 4x440 relay team, which is actually a reasonably good team. They just seem to have a serious performance block whenever they run against Mark. Their worst performance of the year is always against Northside. In fact, no one can figure out how the Centerville 4x440 relay team can always make it this far and perform so poorly during the state invitational meet. Barbara casually walks by their bench, and sure enough, Evans is walking around in the area minding everyone else's business. The meet gets underway, and the hurdlers get on the track. This year's controversy is already brewing before the first gun goes off. Brad Evans walks by the north side bench and is taking notes. He apparently knows who's who and what events they are running. This year, Bobby B., Erica, and Akinmola are at the center of the controversy. The controversy surrounding Kathy and Paula, however, has not gone away. The Centerville prodigy, Evans, reports what he has seen, or rather what he thinks he has seen, to Mr. Ruff, who will begin spreading rumors shortly. One could only imagine what kind of information Evans is reporting to Mr. Ruff. The 100-yard dash preliminaries are up after the hurdles, so Eddie and Kathy warm up. Eddie is the number one seed again this year. Kathy is the number two seed and will be running next to Eddie. As in previous years, the six fastest times of the morning will make it to the final. This year, Eddie and Kathy have no real competition. Kathy, however, has the chance to break the women's 100-yard dash state record. Eddie tells her that he will help her break the record by running as fast as he can. The call is made for the 100-yard dash. Mr. Fraser, Eddie, and Kathy head for the starting line. When the other sprinters arrive, the Amazon chant begins. One of the runners, who apparently has never been to a state-level meet, comments, "What is all this Amazon crap?" Kathy replies, "That's my cheering section. All that cheering is for me. It's all mine. It's not for you." The focus shifts to Kathy, who, now at 6 feet tall, towers over most of the other runners. The runners in the heat are too busy looking over Kathy, wondering whether she is from the Amazon like they have heard. Kathy whispers to Eddie, same behavior, different group. Everyone ignores Eddie, the fastest guy in the state. The starter tells the runners in the first heat to get ready. Kathy tells the other runners, now, when the gun goes off, don't forget to run, and the finish line is that way, as she points down the track. Kathy is treating the best runners in the state as if they are part of her summer camp gym class for kids. Kathy then mentions to the other runners, and please don't forget to make sure that both of your shoelaces are tied. Kathy's comments perturb the other runners, who quickly realize Kathy is talking to them like little children. A few of them are really ticked off because they are being treated by Kathy as if this is their first race. The starter announces, on your marks, catching some of the ticked-off runners off guard. Seeing the runners ready, the starter announces, set. The gun is fired, and Kathy lets out her primal scream, literally scaring the crap out of some of the runners. One runner actually got so scared, he stopped running right out of the blocks, thinking something was seriously wrong. Unfortunately, that is his problem, and he will not get a chance to run again. Eddie is used to hearing Kathy's primal scream, which does not bother him in the least. Eddie and Kathy, who always seem to be out of the blocks first, take an early lead. With one runner out of the race, the field is quickly whittled down. One of the runners, who got annoyed by Kathy's pre-race instructions, actually falls to the ground after a few yards. The nature of the runner's issue is unclear. He could have tripped or strained a muscle. Overall, this is the worst possible start one could hope for among the top seeds in the 100-yard dash. Two of the top runners are out of the race, and it's not because of their skill level. Halfway through the race, Eddie is in first place, Kathy is in second place, and the two remaining runners are distantly in last place. Eddie crosses the finish line first, and Kathy second, right behind the fastest guy in the stadium. Kathy and Eddie exchange high fives and walk toward Mr. Fraser, who is standing in the coach's area. Following the race, Eddie, Kathy, and Mr. Fraser all walk back to the bench together. Mr. Fraser tells them, both of you did really good. Kathy asks, what was my time? Mr. Fraser replies, you're off by a tenth or two, meaning she is off the state record by that much. Mr. Fraser reassures Eddie and Kathy that they will both make it to the final. Sounding a little like Braden, Mr. Fraser, wondering why they even bother to have a final, mentions they should just move on to the next event. You guys have it wrapped up. The field this year surprisingly looks worse than last year. After the race, Eddie and Kathy take some time to rest on the bench. The order of events has been changed because of the number of Northside runners participating in multiple events. The mile is up next, which would normally be run later. Barbara accompanies Mitchell and Akinmola to the starting line. On the way, Barbara explains to Akinmola that these runners are the best in the state and to try not to fall behind. Akinmola is used to taking second place, finishing shortly after Mitchell takes first place. Today, however, there will be real competition in the field. Akinmola will soon find out where his skill level really lies. The milers begin to congregate around the starting line. One of the runners asks Akinmola, hey, are you that guy from Africa? Akinmola replies, why do you want to know? The guy replies, if you are him, the word got around that you're fast. Akinmola replies, asking, are people talking about me? The guy replies, yeah. A lot. The rumor is that your coach went to Africa to get you. Akinmola smiles and tells him, I met my coach before I moved here. But I flew here on the plane myself. No one is going to get any information out of Akinmola. When he says anything, he answers very vaguely and increases any suspicion that he may not be here legitimately. Standing around listening to the conversation is Brad Evans, the Centerville spy, who is minding everyone else's business at the starting line. Evans talks to Mr. Ruff, letting him know what he heard. Mr. Ruff is angry that John McNamara, the Centerville miler, is not seated as high as Akinmola. Evans and Mr. Ruff also talk with Rudy Parker, the Henderson High School coach. Zach Ward, the Henderson miler, and John McNamara, the Centerville miler, were supposed to be battling it out with Mitchell this year for first place. They are not at all happy that Akinmola, a sophomore, has come out of nowhere and landed a highly seeded position in the state invitational meet. What is of particular concern to Mr. Ruff and Mr. Parker is that, since McNamara and Ward are seniors, this is the last year that they will be running. This is their last chance to medal, and the odds are not looking good for one of them. The 1 mile run begins, and Mitchell takes an early lead. He knows that, if Akinmola takes the lead, Akinmola is likely to win. Between Mitchell and Akinmola, this will be a fight to the finish. Behind Mitchell and Akinmola is John Cavallari, running for Northport, followed by McNamara and Ward. 10 yards behind Ward, a bunched-up pack of runners begins to form. Halfway through the race, the mile is quickly becoming a race between Mitchell, Akinmola, and Cavallari. McNamara and Ward run head-to-head, but they are slowly losing ground. Mr. Ruff and Mr. Parker are now wondering where Cavallari came from. This is the first time they've ever seen him run. But, since the competitors are from all over the state, the coaches cannot expect to know everyone. Standing in the coaches area, Mr. Ruff sarcastically tells Mr. Fraser, "It looks like Northport picked up some competition for you." Mr. Fraser, looking at his clipboard, then glancing at the spread of runners on the track, authoritatively tells Mr. Ruff, "That's John Cavallari. He's expected to take third place. Northport paid me a lot of money for him. They wanted Akinmola, but I wasn't willing to give him up. No one gets the upper hand in psychological warfare against Northside." Mr. Fraser has now given Mr. Ruff one more thing to be concerned about. Mr. Fraser also underhandedly informed Mr. Ruff that John McNamara will be going home empty-handed today. During the last lap, Mitchell and Akinmola are far enough ahead that, barring a spectacular finish by Cavallari, they will not be caught. Ward takes a slight lead over McNamara, battling it out for the title of the first loser. With about 220 yards to go, Mitchell is still in the lead, being pressured by Akinmola. Cavallari closes the gap, but with 100 yards remaining, he cannot overtake Akinmola. At the finish line, Mitchell takes first place, Akinmola takes second place, and Cavallari takes third place. Ward, running for Henderson, who earned third place last year, takes fourth place this year. McNamara, running for Centerville, takes fifth place. After the race is over, Ward can be seen sobbing as he walks away from the finish line. McNamara, who is also not too happy, clearly displays his disgust. Eddie and Kathy are reminded by Mr. Fraser that the 100-yard dash final follows the mile. The call is made and Mr. Fraser, Eddie, and Kathy go to the starting line. On the way, Mr. Fraser tells Eddie and Kathy that Jay Draper, who runs for Riverdale, is running in the 100-yard dash final, and is their only real competition. Mark and Paula both beat Draper last year in the 220-yard dash. Draper could have possibly beaten Paula, but the psychological warfare before that race was quite intense. Mr. Fraser informs Eddie and Kathy that Mark and Paula really twisted up Draper's mind last year. Kathy also remembers Draper from last year's 4x440 relay. Of most importance, however, is that Draper has a very short fuse. While they are waiting, Kathy, using a preschool teacher's voice, tells the finalists, "Everybody please check and make sure your shoelaces are tied. Someone fell down earlier today on the track. We must remember to be very careful at all times." The starter mentions she has a point. The contender, who fell down earlier tripped over his own shoelaces. Let's not let that happen again. Kathy then tells the finalists in her preschool teacher's voice, I hope to see all of you at the finish line. I'll be waiting there for you. For some reason, the other finalists are really annoyed by Kathy's pre-race antics. After all, this is the final for the 100-yard dash, and it's serious business. Dwayne Harris, running for Central, is particularly annoyed by Kathy's comments. Kathy beat Harris last year in this same race, so Harris has a score to settle. Harris is quite calm compared with Draper, who is having a shit fit listening to Kathy. But Draper has a short fuse, so Kathy uses it to her advantage. The other two runners don't seem to be as annoyed, but they'll probably lose anyway. The starter tells everyone to get ready. They walk up to the blocks, and the Amazon cheer begins. Kathy tells the other runners, now remember, they are all cheering for me. I'm so sorry that no one showed up to cheer for you guys. Draper complains to the starter, telling him, can't you tell her to shut up? The starter ignores Draper and announces, on your marks. The starter announces, set, and the Amazon cheer gets louder. When the gun is fired, Eddie and Kathy are out of the blocks faster than their hopelessly distracted competition. Kathy's pre-race comments really irritated some of the other runners, particularly Draper. It was easy to see how Mark and Paula pissed him off so much last year. Draper has a very short fuse, which is apparently connected to a nuclear weapon. And Harris, who is actually an excellent athlete, is tired of being beaten by Kathy. Eddie's in first place, and knows Kathy is right behind him. Kathy is focused on catching Eddie. With 50 yards remaining, it does not look like anyone will catch Kathy, much less Eddie. With 25 yards remaining, no one is within reach of Eddie or Kathy. Draper and Harris battle it out for third place, with Harris having a slight advantage. Eddie crosses first, with Kathy following close behind. Harris finishes in a distant third place, and Draper gets a participation trophy this year. Eddie and Kathy congratulate each other with a victory hug, a high five, and a kiss. Eddie puts Kathy on his shoulders, and the crowd goes wild. Eddie and Kathy take a victory walk down the track, as Kathy waves to the crowd. When they return to the bench, Dr. Karakova, the meet director and Kathy's father, gives them some good news. Dr. Karakova confidentially informs Mr. Fraser, Eddie, and Kathy that Eddie just broke the state record, and Kathy broke the state record for women in the 100-yard dash. He also tells them to not mention it until later, since the times have to be verified. That would help explain why the third-place winner, Harris, finished so far behind. Eddie takes a short rest before he has to go and throw the discus. Kathy wants pizza, but she knows she can't have one until dinner. And Kathy, who is hungry at the moment, wants to wait for Eddie before she gets lunch. Braden is ready to run the 440-yard dash, and Mr. Fraser accompanies him to the starting line. The 4x220 relay will be up after the 440-yard dash. There is a lot going on at the meet today, including a controversy brewing with Mr. Ruff, the Centerville coach, and Mr. Parker, the Henderson coach. Both coaches seriously believe that Akinmola is ineligible to run. Zach Ward, who ran the mile for Henderson, would take third place if Akinmola is found to be ineligible. Centerville, who will be up against Northside in the 4x440 relay later, has nothing to lose by attempting to take down Mr. Fraser for the first time. Mr. Ruff and Mr. Parker now both also believe that Bobby B. is in college and throws the shot put to earn his tuition money. Mr. Ruff and Mr. Parker somehow convince Mr. Lyons, the Riverdale coach, of Mr. Fraser's gross violations of the rules that affect them all. Meanwhile, Eddie heads to the field event area, finding Bobby B. and Mr. Zunday. Bobby B., so far, has claimed to the winning throw in the shot put. The head field judge understands Eddie is also participating in track events, so he works him into the rotation as quickly as he can. Eddie warms up and talks with Mr. Zunday as he waits for his call. Mr. Zunday informs Eddie that the best throw so far is around 175 feet by Mark Miller, who throws for Jefferson. Miller took the silver medal in the discus last year and is expecting to win the gold medal this year. Eddie is called for his turn. Eddie steps up to the discus pad and takes a look around, noticing that there are many people watching. Eddie, taking his time, goes into his wind-up and into the spin. He releases the discus and lets out a primal scream that rivals Kathy's. The discus soars through the air, catching the attention of all of the discus competitors. Eddie returns to the bench and sits with Mr. Zunday and Bobby B. Mr. Zunday tells Eddie, "Congratulations. You just won the gold medal." Eddie replies, "How do you know?" Mr. Zunday tells him, "Your throw crossed the 200-foot line. No one has come close to that in years." The measurement comes in and is 202 feet 8 inches. Mr. Zunday tells Eddie that about wraps up the discus. Eddie asks Mr. Zunday, "Kathy wants to eat lunch. Do I have to throw it again?" Mr. Zunday tells him, "Technically, no. But you should take your three throws anyway. It would look better if you did." Eddie sits on the bench, talking to Bobby B, and Mr. Zunday, waiting for his next throw. While he is waiting, Mark Miller steps up to make his second attempt. Miller is painfully aware of the distance of Eddie's first throw and knows he must seriously step up his game if he is to win. Miller was under the false impression that, with Brad Sheffield gone, he would be winning the gold medal this year. Miller makes his second attempt, and the discus lands just beyond the 175-foot line. He apparently cannot deliver the distance needed to win the gold medal, and will have to settle for the silver medal again. Miller, who is a junior this year, will have a lot of work to do before next year if he wants to win the gold medal. Eddie's second and third attempts come in at about the same distance as his first attempt. Eddie already knows that he won, so there is no need for any additional effort just to prove a point. Mr. Zunday congratulates Eddie and tells him that he can go and eat lunch with Kathy now. Eddie decides to wait for a moment so he can watch as Bobby B makes his final attempt at the shot put. Bobby B already has the winning throw of the day, but wants to surpass his best throw. Bobby B's throw is good, but is just a few inches shy of his best of the day. Just as Eddie gets up to leave, Mr. Ruff, the Centerville coach, and his spy, Brad Evans, walk over to call an unsolicited meeting with Mr. Zunday. After Mr. Ruff not so cordially introduces himself, he tells Mr. Zunday, "I have something to say to you. I am constantly hearing that your shot put guy, Robert Bradshaw, is in college, and throwing the shot is how he makes his tuition money." Mr. Zunday, perceiving the malice in Mr. Ruff's voice, replies, "So what?" Mr. Zunday really does not want to be bothered with such nonsense, but, since Mr. Ruff wants to discuss it, Mr. Zunday is up for a little free comedy. Mr. Ruff replies, "So what? Is that all you have to say?" Mr. Zunday replies, asking, "What else would you like me to say?" Bobby B, hearing his name, walks over with Eddie to see what the problem might be. Bobby B asks Mr. Zunday, "What's up?" Mr. Zunday tells Bobby B, "Mr. Ruff, here, seems to think that you throw the shot put to make tuition money for college." Bobby B, who has heard this rumor before, tells Mr. Ruff, "I have no comment." Mr. Zunday asks Mr. Ruff, "Does that answer your question?" Mr. Ruff replies, "Yes. It absolutely does." Mr. Zunday replies, "How could he have answered your question? He never addressed the issue one way or another." Mr. Ruff replies, "Oh yes, he did. By refusing to comment, he's saying that he makes his tuition money for college by throwing the shot put." Lowering the boom, Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Ruff in no uncertain terms, "That's your whole problem, Ruff. Your team is pretty much of middle school caliber. And you run around during every meet, blaming others for your incompetency as a coach. If you'd spend your time developing your team's skills, you might not get shut out next year. You pulled this same shit last year and made a fool of yourself. If you want to do it again and make a bigger fool of yourself this year, be my guest. I am not going to stop you. Mr. Zunde certainly tells it like it is. Mr. Ruff, annoyed by the truth, tells Mr. Zunde, you people have got to be stopped. Mr. Zunde tells Mr. Ruff, exactly. And your job, as a coach, is to stop us on the track. That's the nature of competition. Unless you learn that, you'll never get anywhere, either on the track or in life. Mr. Ruff is getting nowhere with Mr. Zunde, so he walks away with his spy, figuring out what to do next. As far as anyone knows, no one has ever won an argument, such as the one Mr. Ruff started, with Mr. Zunde. Kathy and Eddie head to the university cafeteria to get some lunch. Eddie tells Kathy, I have some good news. I won the discus. Kathy gives Eddie a high five and replies, awesome. We need to celebrate. Eddie knows where Kathy is going with this. She wants her pizza, but it's going to have to wait until after the meet. Eddie also fills Kathy in on the scene made by Mr. Ruff. After hearing about the encounter, Kathy replies, wow. It sounds like Mr. Zunde really put Mr. Ruff in his place. I can't wait to hear what Mr. Ruff has to say to Mr. Fraser and my father later. Everyone knows that a confrontation is coming. Dr. Karakova lends a deaf ear to Mr. Ruff and is tired of his nonsense. And Mr. Fraser will ride with the tide and go with the flow. If he's lucky, Mr. Fraser might even get the opportunity to start a new rumor. After lunch, Kathy tells Eddie, I want my yearly nap now. Can we, please? Eddie replies, yeah. Let's go and do that. We can go to that place where we went to take a nap last year. They find the student lounge and find a place to rest for a while. The student lounge is air-conditioned, so they are not standing out in the heat all afternoon. Standing in the heat for 2 or 3 hours before a race is not conducive to good performance. The 4x440 relay is the last event of the day, so Eddie and Kathy have a while before they need to be ready. After their nap, Eddie and Kathy return to the team bench. Mark and Paula fill them in on the event results that they've missed. Paula relates that Mark won the 220-yard dash, and she got second place, barely beating out the guy who edged her out during the indoor track season. Braden won the 440-yard dash, and the 4x220 relay team won gold. The mile medley team has just finished their run, and it appears that they are headed back to the bench with Mr. Fraser. Eddie tells Paula that he won the discus, but he finds out that someone had already told her. Mr. Fraser is ecstatic at the team's performance this year. With the whole team together, Mr. Fraser takes this opportunity to congratulate the group. Mr. Fraser informs the other team members, the mile medley team just had their best run of the year. They'll probably take the gold medal, but we'll have to wait and see. A voice is heard from behind Mr. Fraser, stating, that's because one of the runners is from Africa and shouldn't even be here at the meet. He's here illegally. The voice is that of none other than Mr. Ruff, the Centerville coach. Mr. Ruff, his protege, Brad Evans, and Mr. Parker, the coach from Henderson, approach Mr. Fraser and ambush the north side bench. It's not hard to figure out what this surprise attack is about. Mr. Fraser has already been informed by Mr. Zunde about Mr. Ruff's childish behavior earlier today. Mr. Fraser has been expecting a visit from Mr. Ruff all day. The team is well aware of the accusations made against them, which they all know are false. To the team, the rumors are all fun and games. Unfortunately, Mr. Ruff has no sense of humor coupled with no sense at all. That makes him pretty much a jerk. Mr. Fraser asks Mr. Ruff, what exactly is your problem? Mr. Ruff, in a heated rant, tells Mr. Fraser, in front of his team, you picked this guy up from Africa, and he stole a medal in the mile. And now, he stole another medal in the mile medley relay. Akinmola stands up, points at Mr. Ruff, and exclaims, are you talking about me? Mr. Ruff points to Akinmola, and replies, yeah. I'm talking about you. Akinmola walks up to Mr. Ruff, telling him off, exclaiming, I didn't steal anything. I work hard for everything I get, and winning is no different. And I am not here illegally. My family moved here at the end of the winter. They picked Mr. Fraser's high school for me because he's the best coach around with the best team. I am glad my father didn't pick your school. When we ran against you in the beginning of the year, I couldn't believe how weak your team was. But now I know why. Do you understand me? Kathy whispers to Paula, he fits in really good. Akinmola certainly put Mr. Ruff in his place. Braden stands up and interrupts Akinmola, directing his rants at Mr. Ruff, exclaiming, you're so full of shit. Your sorriest team ain't won shit all year, and you keep getting your ass kicked. And we're going to kick it again next year. You just watch. Braden then points to the Henderson coach, Mr. Parker, and rants, and we're going to kick your ass next year too, just like we did this year. Your team is nothing but a bunch of crybabies. Like your mile guy today, who cried like a little baby with a wet diaper when he lost. My grandmother can run faster than anyone on your team. Braden again points to the Centerville coach, Mr. Ruff, and exclaims, and there's one more race later. These guys, pointing collectively to Eddie, Mark, Kathy, and Paula, are gonna kick your ass so bad, you ain't gonna know what happened. You just wait and see. That's gonna be the biggest ass kicking of this meet. And when you wake up tomorrow morning, your ass is gonna hurt so bad, you won't be able to get out of bed. Then, you'll be wondering why your ass hurts so bad. And then, you'll remember it's because your ass got kicked right here. Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday stand with their arms crossed, allowing the team to take care of Mr. Ruff and his henchmen. Mr. Ruff, trying to combat the heated discussion, spouts off, how about these two girls from the Amazon? Kathy, just waiting for her turn, stands up and tells Mr. Ruff, get it straight, Junior. We're not from the Amazon. We're from Paradise Island. Mr. Ruff exclaims, see? I told you. Kathy continues, look it up on the map, you moron. Paradise Island doesn't even exist. Haven't you ever heard about Wonder Woman? Jeesh. And they let you teach school. You must really be a special kind of stupid to even believe that. And, just for your information, none of us get paid to run. And Bobby B. is not in college and doesn't get paid to throw the shot put. Braden adds, yeah. We all kick your ass free of charge. Kathy walks right in front of Mr. Ruff, looking him straight in the eye, asking him, by the way, Junior, did you forget to take your medication today? Mr. Ruff replies, no, letting the cat out of the bag that he apparently takes some sort of medication. Kathy brilliantly replies, well, then, maybe they need to increase the dose. Mark comments, he's been taking way too much of that psycho tubin. The entire north side bench laughs, as Mr. Ruff hits himself on the side of his head with his hand. Mr. Ruff was blindsided by Kathy just as easily as his team is blindsided by Mark during every meet. The question of the day would now be what kind of medication Mr. Ruff is taking. Mr. Ruff, Brad Evans, and Mr. Parker finally get a good close-up look at the North Side team. The North Side athletes are all physically much better developed than Mr. Ruff originally thought. Mr. Ruff and his cohorts have found out that the North Side team is just as competitive in standing their ground using verbal combat as they are on the track. This, for some reason, is extremely worrisome to Mr. Ruff. After Mr. Ruff has been verbally beaten down, Mr. Fraser asks, Is there anything else we can help you with today? Mr. Ruff replies, I've had it with you guys. You don't take anything seriously. Braden exclaims, yes, we do. Winning. Mr. Ruff and his buddies walk away. Mark yells out, hey. Don't forget to tell McCrutchen to check his shoelaces. The Northside team laughs as Mr. Ruff walks away, defeated once again. On their walk back to their benches, Mr. Parker exclaims, did you see the size of those guys? Evans replies, I've never seen anyone that big when I ran for Centerville. Mr. Ruff exclaims, they are all almost as big as Mr. Zunday, and that's big. And the shot put guy, he's huge. I had no idea he was that big. And the women. Two of them are 6 feet tall and must weigh 180 pounds. Evans, trying to earn brownie points for his internship, remarks, no one on the college team is as big as those guys. Mr. Ruff concludes, they all must be taking steroids. That's the only explanation. Mr. Parker replies, that sounds reasonable to me. The size of those guys is unbelievable. Mr. Ruff mentions, I hate to say it, but I think we all just witnessed a case of roid rage. There you have it. Mr. Ruff thinks he has figured it out. Everyone on Mr. Fraser's team is on steroids. That would explain both their performance and their size. Well, that settles it. Mr. Fraser and the team have put an end to all the rumors. The Amazon rumor is over. The Paradise Island rumor is over. The short-lived Africa rumor is over. The rumor that the athletes get paid is over. It was fun for the team while it lasted. But in the wake of squelching all the rumors, another rumor has been born in its place. The new rumor is that everyone on the Northside team is taking steroids. The call for the final event is made, and the 4x440 relay team, along with Mr. Fraser, heads to the starting line. The teams arrive one by one, and Mark finds McCutchen among the same Centerville team they beat during the indoor track season. The crowd sees Kathy and Paula as they wave, and the Amazon chant once again begins. Kathy tells the other relay teams, those cheers are for us, not you guys, as if the other teams didn't know that already. Mark asks McCutchen, hey, what's eating at your coach? McCutchen asks, what are you talking about? Mark replies, someone must have peed in his cornflakes this morning. He came over to our bench crying like a baby because you guys can never win. Mr. Ruff, overhearing Mark's comments, tells his 4x440 relay team, stay focused. Don't let him distract you. Mark tells McCutchen and his relay team, yeah. Stay focused. Stay focused on losing, because that's what you're going to do. Mr. Fraser, Eddie, Kathy, and Paula have been listening to Mark's verbal exchange with McCutchen. Mr. Fraser asks the rest of the relay team, how does Mark come up with this stuff? Eddie tells Mr. Fraser, I've known Mark a long time. He was born that way. Paula tells Mr. Fraser, and take a look at their team. They look like they've lost already. The starter tells the first heat to get on the track. Once everyone is in position, the command, on your marks, is given by the starter, quickly followed by, set. Everyone gets set, and the gun is fired. Mark takes an early lead, running his best because the girls want another medal, and this is the last race of their senior year. McCutchen watches, along with Mr. Ruff, as Mark makes the trip around the track look so easy. Paula waves to the crowd as she steps onto the track. As Mark approaches the transition zone, the Amazon chant gets louder. Paula receives the baton and appears to run around the track as effortlessly as Mark just did. Once Mark has recovered to some degree, Mr. Fraser tells him that he ran a 48-second quarter mile. Mr. Ruff overhears Mr. Fraser telling Mark his time and clearly expresses his disgust. On the cheerier side, Kathy waves to the crowd as she gets onto the track. Paula hands off to Kathy, who lets out a primal scream that startles some of the runners. This is Kathy's last high school run, and she's determined to make it a memorable one. Halfway through Kathy's lap, Mr. Fraser looks at his stopwatch and tells Eddie she's on track for a personal record. Eddie gets onto the track, waiting for Kathy. McCutcheon looks over at Mark as he gets on the track. Mark just smiles and points to McCutcheon's shoes. Mr. Ruff cannot understand how Mark can deliver a 48-second quarter mile so effortlessly and still have the energy to make fun of McCutcheon. Kathy hands off to Eddie and finds a place to lie down as she watches Eddie run his leg. Paula tells Mark, "I guess this is it for us. This is our last race." As Eddie makes his way around the track, Mr. Ruff is overheard saying, "They make it look so easy." Today, for some reason, Mr. Ruff is more focused on watching Northside run rather than watching his own team. Kathy stands up as Eddie approaches the finish line. Eddie crosses the finish line first, and the team cheers, giving each other high fives. Eddie and Kathy hug each other. While they are walking back to the bench, a tear comes from Kathy's eye as she tells him, "It's over, Eddie. I'm so sad. I'm not coming back next year to run with you." Eddie tells Kathy, "But you made all this happen. 2 years is better than not running at all. You'll be back next year as a coach." Kathy replies, "Yeah, I guess you're right. I was given my chance, and I won." Eddie reminds Kathy, "You had to fight Mr. Crum to get here, and then you had to fight everyone on the track to win." Kathy reminds herself and Eddie, whispering, "And we had to fight for my life too. That was harder than winning today." The team decides to get dinner before the awards ceremony. Following the precedent set last year, Mr. Fraser tells the team that he is buying dinner for everyone. There was no bet this year, but Mr. Fraser figures it's the least that he can do for his team. They all head to the cafeteria, where pizza is waiting for them and Mr. Fraser. After dinner, they head back to the team's bench. The stadium has been set up for the awards ceremony while they were away. The announcement is made for the winners of each event to move to the shot put pad. Everyone on the Northside team has won something today, so the team heads to the shot put pad, waiting for their name to be called. The program comes to the 100-yard dash. The meet announcer announces, "Setting a new state record in the 100-yard dash, running for Northside High School, first place goes to Edward Boganskaya." The crowd cheers as Eddie walks up and stands on the first place tier. The meet announcer then announces, "Also setting a new state record for women in the 100-yard dash, also running for Northside High, second place goes to Katerina Karakova." The crowd goes wild, hearing that Kathy has broken the women's state record. The meet announcer announces in third place, running for Central High School, Dwayne Harris. Once the medalists are on their tiers, the meet officials drape the medals around the winners' necks. Kathy and Eddie each get an additional special medal for breaking the state record. Photographs of the winners are taken, mostly of Kathy, who is the center of attention today. Eddie and Kathy return to the shot put area, waiting to be called for their other events. The ceremony moves along quickly. Mark takes the gold medal in the 220-yard dash, and Paula takes the silver medal this year. Braden takes the gold medal in the 440-yard dash. In the 880-yard run, Johnson takes the gold medal, and Mitchell takes the silver medal. In the mile, Mitchell takes the gold medal and Akinmola takes the silver medal. In the relay events, three relay teams walk away with medals. Johnson, Erika, Hoffer, and Elliot win the silver medal in the 4x220 relay. Johnson, Braden, Akinmola, and Mitchell win the gold medal in the mile medley relay. And in the 4x440 relay, Mark, Kathy, Paula, and Eddie win the gold medal for the second year in a row. In the field events, Bobby B. wins the gold medal in the shot put. And Eddie, new to the discus this year, wins the gold medal in that event. After the ceremony, the parents come down from the bleachers and join the medalists in their celebration. The same group that met during last year's victory celebration has a reunion this year. Eddie's parents congratulate him and the other team members. Erica's father is very surprised that she made it to the state invitational meet and actually won a medal. Akinmola's parents meet Mr. Fraser again and are also very surprised that Adekunle has done so well this year. College scouts, reporters, and photographers make their way to the north side bench and attempt to talk with anyone they can. Unfortunate for the scouts, Kathy and Paula, who are the only seniors, have already committed to a college. A few of the scouts try to get Eddie interested in going to college. Eddie tells them that he wants to be a mechanic. The scouts try to convince Eddie to get a business degree or whatever else they may offer at their schools. Eddie simply tells the scouts that he doesn't want to push a pencil around for the rest of his life. The team, wearing their medals, poses for a team photograph with Mr. Fraser, Mr. Zunde, Barbara, and Wendy. Mr. Fraser answers a lot of the reporters' questions. Mr. Fraser is inundated with questions about Amazon women, runners getting paid to win, and going to Africa to pick up a few new runners. Mr. Fraser tells the reporters that Mr. Ruff is spreading those rumors and that he'll have the whole summer to conjure up new ones. Mr. Fraser tells the reporters to not believe anything that Mr. Ruff or Mr. Parker say, but just be entertained by what they come up with next. With a new style of psychological warfare, Mr. Fraser has just completely discredited Mr. Ruff and Mr. Parker. On Monday morning, following the meet, Eddie, Kathy, and the tribe all hang out on the front lawn of the school. With their medals draped around their necks, the group celebrates again. The medalists get a lot of high fives from their friends as they get off their buses. Eddie tries to talk Daniel Gaspari, known as Gump on the football field, into trying out for the shot put or discus next year. Gaspari, who is not on a spring sports team, has about a year to consider Eddie's offer. Even Chucky gives recognition to the group, flipping them a bird on his way into school. The week for final exams arrives, so there will be tests followed by more tests. With one more week to go, summer vacation is right on the horizon. Kathy and Paula are counting down the days until graduation. This will be a long and busy week for everyone. But once the week is over, a few weeks of freedom begins. The final bell of the school year rings, which means graduation is the next day. Since the weather is nice, graduation will be held out on the track. There is much more seating in the bleachers than in the auditorium, so the track is the preferred place to hold graduation. The final bell of the year also brings bad news for some students. Mr. Fraser failed Chucky and Jimmy O'Brien in gym class this year, as recommended by Mr. Zunde. Since gym is a required subject, they will both be sweating outside, trying to pass the class in the summer heat. But since they both want to be on the track team, the summer workouts should get their sorry asses into better shape. On the morning of graduation, Kathy and Paula are all ready to receive their diplomas and move on. Kathy's and Paula's parents, who have known each other since their girls have been in kindergarten, have waited for this moment for a long time. Eddie and Mark will be also watching from the bleachers as their girlfriends graduate. They are not accustomed to sitting on the bleachers. Their place is on the track. Next year at this time, Eddie and Mark will be graduating, taking their last walk on the track as students. The bleachers begin to fill with the parents and friends of the graduates. Eddie and Mark find Kathy's and Paula's parents and sit with them. Kathy's mother asks Eddie, "How did you guys get here? I don't see your bicycles." Eddie and Mark usually walk or bicycle everywhere they go. Eddie replies, "I drove my MGB. Today is its maiden voyage." Kathy's father replies, "Wow. So it's finished. I've heard all about your MGB for the last year. I'll have to see it sometime." Mark tells everyone, It seems to run fine. It got us here. Eddie tells Mark, of course it runs fine, bro. What did you expect? The commencement activities begin on schedule. Everyone focuses their attention to the stage, which has been set up on the field where Mr. Crum got hit by the discus a few months ago. Everyone says the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by the band playing the national anthem. The invocation this year is given by Dr. Christobue's Akinmola, who is a preacher that, as only the track team knows, moved from Nigeria in late winter. Dr. Akinmola is the father of Adekunle Akinmola, so the track team knows him well. Dr. Akinmola's first name, Christobue's, is quite fitting. The translation and meaning of his name in English is Christ is King. After the invocation, the superintendent of schools gives her address. The superintendent's address is followed by the valedictorian's and salutatorian's address. The administrators get ready to distribute the diplomas to the graduates. While they are getting ready for the main ceremony, the parents begin to have a few personal conversations in the bleachers. Out of the blue, a girl, dressed in a swimsuit, comes out of the woods and sprints along the track between the bleachers and the field where the ceremony is about to begin. She takes a lap around the track and waves to the crowd. The Amazon chant begins, which is started by Mark, Eddie, and a few of their friends. This year's senior prank, organized by the track team, turns out to be a huge hit. After the lap around the track, Erica runs back into the woods, disappearing until next autumn. Everyone enjoyed the prank, except for Mr. Crum, which is to be expected. But there is nothing Mr. Crum can do. There is no rule against what Erica did, and besides, school is technically no longer in session. The ceremony gets underway, and the graduates walk up one by one to receive their diplomas. They are called up in alphabetical order, so Paula, as always, goes before Kathy. Mr. Crum, the principal, calls Paula's name, announcing, "Paula Giovanni, summa cum laude." It must have killed Mr. Crum to proclaim the words "summa cum laude" after Paula's name, but that's the way it goes. Paula is draped with gold tassels, signifying her academic excellence. Paula is also wearing every single one of her track medals today, which, for some reason, irritates Mr. Crum. Paula shakes Mr. Crum's hand, takes two steps, and the school superintendent, Dr. Noreen Brooks, hands Paula her diploma. Paula walks off stage and returns to her seat. The ceremony moves on, and Mr. Crum calls Kathy's name, announcing, "Katerina Karakova, summa cum laude." Kathy, also draped with gold tassels and wearing her track medals, walks up and shakes Mr. Crum's hand. After shaking Mr. Crum's hand, Kathy pats Mr. Crum on the head and speaks into the microphone, "Mr. Crum, you're in the red zone." The entire group of graduates starts laughing hysterically. All of the graduates learned one thing this year. After Mr. Crum got in the way of the discus, everyone in the school, including the teachers, learned what the red zone is and to stay out of it. Dr. Brooks even laughs at Kathy's remark. Kathy takes two steps, and Dr. Brooks hands Kathy her diploma. Kathy walks off stage and takes her seat. After the closing ceremony, caps fly into the air and the graduates cheer. The parents come down from the bleachers and meet the graduates, teachers, and administrators. The whole crowd mingles for quite a while. Many of the parents have not seen each other since their kids were in grade school. Graduation is a sort of reunion for many of the parents. Everyone talks about their plans after graduation, about where they are going to college, and what they will be doing this summer. Mr. Zunde personally congratulates Kathy and Paula, who are standing with their parents, Eddie, Mark, and a few others. Eddie and Mark both congratulate Kathy and Paula. Mr. Zunde tells Eddie and Mark that next year it's their turn. Mr. Zunde tells Kathy that her telling Mr. Crum that he is standing in the red zone will probably go down in school history. While Mr. Zunde is talking to Kathy's and Paula's parents, the superintendent, Dr. Brooks comes over and gives her cousin, Mr. Zunday, a hug. Kathy and Paula both get special congratulations and a hug from Dr. Brooks. Dr. Brooks addresses Eddie and Mark by name and shakes their hands. She tells them that she occasionally attends the home meets. Dr. Brooks tells Eddie and Mark to keep up the good work, and that the track team has given the district a really good reputation over the last few years. Eddie and Mark are both very surprised that the superintendent of schools knows them by name and of their accomplishments. After graduation, Kathy, Eddie, Paula, Mark, and a few of Kathy and Paula's friends head over to Kathy's house for her graduation party. The pool is warm enough to swim in, so everyone brings their swimsuit. Already at Kathy's house is Joe, from the pizzeria, delivering Kathy's preferred graduation meal. There will be enough pizza, calzones, and side dishes for everyone. And there will probably be enough pizza left over for a few days. Kathy has invited all of her friends from the track team to the party. Erica is already there, waiting in her swimsuit, after taking her lap around the track earlier today. Kathy arrives home, followed by Eddie and Mark in Eddie's MGB. This is the first time Kathy has seen the MGB on the road, so she wants a ride in it before her graduation party. Eddie tries to convince her to take the ride later, but she will not hear of it. She's been waiting for almost a year to see the MGB on the road, so she wants her ride now. Kathy gets in, and Eddie gives her a short ride around the block. Kathy is very impressed by the ride and how fun the car feels to drive, especially with the top down. When they arrive back at Kathy's house, Eddie convinces her to go into the backyard and make sure the pizza has been delivered and to make sure there are no dead frogs in the skimmers. As far as Kathy is concerned, checking on pizza can wait, but the thought of a dead frog in the skimmers is enough reason to check right now. They walk through the gate, and a crowd exclaims, "Happy graduation!" Kathy whispers to Eddie, "No wonder you didn't want to give me my ride now." Eddie whispers back, "Yeah. They've been waiting. And there are no dead frogs. I checked your pool on the way to graduation." Kathy whispers to Eddie, "The party was supposed to start in an hour." Eddie replies, "We changed that when you weren't looking." Kathy walks into the backyard, seeing all the familiar faces from the track team and school. Mark is talking with Braden, telling him that Kathy told Mr. Crum that he was in the red zone when she received her diploma. Braden wishes he were there to see that. But, you never know, it could happen again next year. Kathy's comment, as Mr. Zunday suspected, will apparently go down in school history. With all the crap Mr. Crum put Kathy through over the years, Kathy got the last laugh. Kathy and Paula get the first slice of pizza, then everyone else digs in. Erica, already having her workout today, wastes no time reaching for a slice. She ran all the way from her house to the school, took her lap around the track, and then ran to Kathy's house. Ready for lunch a while ago, Erica has had to look at the pizza for what seems like hours. Bobby B. threatens to do a cannonball into the pool, and everyone steps back. He then tells everyone he was only joking, and that he'd hate to get the pizza wet. No one wants to eat soggy pizza. Bobby B. takes a few slices, saving the cannonball for later. While everyone is eating, Eddie mentions to Bobby B., "Hey, did you know that there is a discus pad in the elementary school behind Kathy's house?" Bobby B. replies, "No. It wasn't there when I went there." Eddie tells Bobby B., who lives around the corner, "You should paint a shot put ring next to the discus pad so you can practice." Bobby B. asks Eddie, "Where did the discus ring come from?" Eddie tells Bobby B., "Kathy had absolutely nothing to do with it." Bobby B. mentions, "Maybe she can paint one for me." After lunch, the pool becomes the center of attention. Everyone gets in the pool and relaxes for a while. Tessa reminds Eddie about the rematch this summer at the county pool. Tessa assures Eddie that she will beat him this time. Eddie tells Tessa that she not only won't win, but doesn't even stand a chance. Eddie's comment worries Tessa a bit. Perhaps Eddie has a few cards he's not showing. Johnson tells Tessa that the county pool has been closed for a while because Eddie cracked the concrete side wall while doing a flip turn. Tessa doesn't believe that for a second, but a few people might have if Tessa hadn't laughed off Johnson's comment. But today is not a day for a rematch. That will have to wait a few more weeks. The party goes on until late afternoon, when many of the guests begin to head home. Kathy and some of her best friends stay around for the evening party, which wasn't planned, but is happening anyway. Paula and Mark have been in and out of the pool all afternoon. They get out of the pool to get another bite to eat, and then head back into the water. When the sun begins to go down, Kathy lies on the chaise lounge and waits for Katarina's star to come out in the sky. Her star is the first one to appear in the evening sky. Kathy's mother named Katarina's star when Kathy was a child. Kathy would always come out to the backyard in the summertime and lay and wait for her star to appear. Eddie waits with her as Mark and Paula float around in the pool. When Katarina's star appears, Kathy exclaims, "There it is. It's the first time my star came out after I graduated." Eddie and Paula already know about Kathy's star. Paula explains Katarina's star to Mark, who has never heard the story. They all sit around the pool until late evening, when they are about ready to crash. As Mark and Paula are getting ready to leave, Paula mentions, "With any luck, I'll be driving you home soon." Mark replies, "Then I'll get out of shape and have to work out more." Normally, Mark and Paula would just walk home, but Kathy doesn't think Paula should have to walk home on the day she graduated. Since it's late, and it has been a long day, they all decide that Eddie will drive Mark home, and Kathy will drive Paula home. Eddie and Kathy kiss goodnight for the evening. Mark and Paula do the same, and everyone heads out. They will all meet up again tomorrow.